Well, these days on Capitol Hill, it seems that the number one domestic policy issue, at least the thing that everybody is talking about, is Social Security. And the reason everyone is talking about it is that President Bush seems to have put it at the top, or certainly near the top, of his domestic policy agenda for his second term. And I'm sure by now you have heard that the president argues that the system is in serious trouble, and that if nothing is done, that in not very many years into the future, the system's going to run out of money. It's not going to be able to pay the benefits of retirees. Now, it is also true that people in Washington disagree with that, that the Congressional Budget Office and the actuaries of Social Security say, no, that that's actually not true, that one says the system will be solvent until 2042, another says 2052, and then they say, well, after that, no, we can't pay full benefits, but we can pay, say, three-quarters of the benefits. So at any rate, that's something that people are talking about a good deal these days. However, others in Washington say, you know, maybe Social Security does have some problems, but there's a much bigger crisis looming with another program that takes care of needs of seniors and also some people who are disabled, and that is Medicare. And that is what we'll try and spend some time talking about here this morning in this first part of the show. It is said by the Medicare program's trustees that Medicare is likely to run out of money if nothing changes by the year 2019, much sooner than people are talking about for Social Security. In doctors' bills, they say Medicare expenditures will exceed those of Social Security by 2024, so that's only 19 years, and they say that the cost of Medicare will double those of Social Security by 2078. Last year or year before, the president signed into law a proposal that would try to provide some help to people on Medicare with their prescription drug costs, and this morning we'll try to talk a little bit about what people are thinking in Washington and when it comes to Medicare and other potential changes. And our guest for the program is Mary Agnes Carey. She is a senior writer with Congressional Quarterly. It's a publication, or really a kind of a series of publications, all devoted to covering what goes on in Congress and on Capitol Hill. And they have more than 100 reporters, editors, and researchers full-time spending following the Congress and following legislation in print and also online. So if you're interested, you can seek out the publication. And of course, here this morning, questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Ms. Carey, hello.
Hi.
Thank you very much for joining us once again.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, we certainly appreciate you giving us your time. Well, I guess what I would like to do first is to talk a little bit about the program to provide some coverage of prescription drug costs. We've talked now a couple of times about this. And going back to one thing that we discussed the last time we talked, which I think was August?
I think it was in the summer, yeah.
It was in the summer. President Bush signed this into law near the end of 2003, and it goes into effect next year. And to try to provide people some assistance with drug costs in the interim, they came up with this plan of these prescription drug discount cards that people could go out and sign up for. And one of the things that we talked about last time and the time before that was that the number of people who were signing up for these cards was much smaller than had been expected. And the explanation apparently was that a lot of people found it very confusing to figure out, okay, how do I do this and how do I decide that card A is for me rather than card B, C, D, or whatever. And I guess I'm wondering, has that changed? Have many more, since last time we talked, have a lot more people signed up for this?
I think more folks have signed up. I don't believe that they've hit the numbers that they were hoping for with a prescription drug card. But I think if we had some administration folks in the room, they would talk a lot about how some of the, there's still a learning curve, and folks can still sign up for these cards. The full drug benefit doesn't begin, as you know, till next January 2006. So the numbers have been improving. But I think for the government, it's been an ongoing information process to explain the cards. And it's been sort of a window into the world that they'll face this fall in trying to explain to Medicare's more than 40 million elderly and disabled beneficiaries that the options they have for their full drug coverage, which is the big bill you just spoke about, and that goes into full effect on the first of next year.
Well, obviously, their main focus is on the program that goes into effect next year. But if you asked people in the administration or in Congress, how do you think that you did with this intermediate program to try to help provide something in the meantime, would they say that they felt that it was a success?
I think they would. Proponents of it, I think, definitely would, because they would say that it was something seniors never had before. It was an ability for them to look at something that could work for them. It's sort of a trial run, if you will, for the Medicare drug benefit, because the card, going through the process of the Medicare drug card, as you just explained, people would have to look at different programs, different companies. Will this work for me? They have to go through their own analytical exercises in the sense of what drugs do I need? How far am I willing to go to a pharmacy that might be less expensive? Am I comfortable getting my prescription drugs by mail order? Does this card cover what I want, and how much does it charge, and how much does it cover versus another card? Getting seniors into the system to try that, and in many ways, trying the drug card was sort of a pretty easy thing for folks to do. Despite its complexity, it was something where they could just sign up and give it a try, and they could drop it if they didn't like it. They could decide they didn't want to enroll at all, whatever they chose. But it sort of gave people a way to get into looking at the drug benefit. And I think that exercise from the federal official standpoint is a very good exercise. Of course, opponents of the Medicare bill and the drug card have looked at the experience of the drug card, and they've said, look, this shows you how unpredictable, how difficult this is, how hard it is for people to figure out, and it will only be worse when the full benefit goes into effect. So both sides are interpreting it, if you will, to their advantage.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's my understanding that a couple of weeks ago that the administration made public, released, put out there the rules for this program, for this new benefit that's going to go in effect next year. Is that really all worked out? Do we know exactly how it's supposed to work?
Well, the logistics of how a insurance company wants to package benefits, how they go about offering those, how they go about deciding how providers, the physicians that want to participate, and the hospitals and so on, that's, you know, getting processed right now. But I think that the implementation is an ongoing process. There had been rumors, for example, a few months ago that perhaps the full implementation of this drug benefit would have been delayed because the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which is known as CMS, they're overseeing this whole thing, that perhaps the staff couldn't make those deadlines. But every time the officials of CMS have been asked that question, the response has been, no, we're on target, we're going to make our deadline, and this benefit will go online as promised. So, yes, some of the parameters are out there. They're subject to comment, of course, from industry folks, and all the advocates for seniors and for the disabled are digesting them, asking questions, trying to figure them out. But I think it's still a work in progress as we go forward to next January 1st.
Mm-hmm. Well, for people who get their health care from some kind of managed care organization, like they're in an HMO, they're sort of used to the idea that they're going to their physician, the doctor writes a prescription, the doctor probably chooses first from a list of approved drugs. For that, the person probably pays some kind of small copay. Then there's another list of drugs where they say, okay, if you really want these, you can have them, but it's going to cost you more.
Right.
And then there maybe is another level past that where they say, okay, if you really, really want these, it's going to cost you that much more. And that's kind of the way that it works. It is essentially what we're talking about, a program that operates like that.
It certainly could, and it would depend on the company, the entity that's offering the coverage. There are some standard parameters that a company would have to meet if they wanted to offer a Medicare drug benefit. For example, the average premium is $35. It could be higher, it could be lower, depending on the plan. But there are rough parameters of coverage that plans have to meet. But certainly, any health plan could have, for Medicare prescription drugs or to offer all coverage, could offer what you're talking about as tiered co-pricing, and tiered pricing, rather, that has the co-payments sort of tagged to, if you get a generic drug, it costs you less. if you want the newest drug on the market, it will cost you more. I'm sure that plans that offer drug coverage in Medicare are going to do the exact same thing, because that's been shown as a way in the under 65 market, where folks are getting their employer coverage, that's been shown as a great way to keep your drug costs down, because you're, in essence, like you said, you make people pay more for the highest, newest drug.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm having a little bit of a hard time understanding how this changes the healthcare landscape, essentially. How, and in what way is it really so different than it is today?
Well, what you're doing is you're saying to the Medicare population, basically they've been in a situation where a few folks have gotten their coverage from private plans, but most folks have gotten it under Medicare's fee-for-service program, which is a very standardized, uniform, same coverage for all. Now we're moving to a system where beneficiaries, Medicare beneficiaries, could be offered different choices and different options for their coverage. People that like this idea say this is great. Seniors know how to pick things. They know how to pick a car. They know how to research an appliance. A lot of them are web savvy, even though there's documentation to show that a lot of seniors have nothing to do with the internet. But the idea is, let's take the Medicare population now and future and give them choices and give them options. And in many ways, this Medicare drug bill is not written so much. I mean, it will benefit current beneficiaries, and if they don't enroll in it, by a certain point they'll pay a penalty, and there are obstacles there. But I think in many ways it's written for the long term. It's written for a lot of the baby boomers that begin to come into the system at 2010, all these folks that have, in their workplaces, you mentioned, they've already had private health insurance plans, and they're used to it, and they're used to making choices. And I think while many of the older Medicare beneficiaries right now may not want anything to do with this idea of trying to pick a plan, you may have some of the younger beneficiaries, newer folks in the system, and the folks to come may have a greater comfort level. But to balance the picture here, many Democrats and other opponents of the Medicare drug plan believe that they oppose the Medicare drug plan, but they believe the strength of Medicare as it currently exists is its uniformity, that you can be assured no matter where you live in the country, you will get certain things covered, you will have certain copayments, and they're set, and you can know that, and you can take great comfort in it. And they are concerned that this variability will confuse seniors and will cut some short on their coverage.
Well, I guess that would be a concern that I could imagine, and that I would expect people would have, is are we truly putting people in a position where they're going to have to be their own advocate? And what do we do if there are people who just seem very confused about the system and how it's designed to work, and have a tough time to figure out in what way they can participate in the way that's most advantageous for them?
See, this is, you've captured it absolutely perfectly. This is one of the great complexities in trying to put this bill into place. CMS officials have tried to, they've given grants to local entities to try to educate seniors. They've really tried to work to beef up not only their website, but their 800 numbers, to have operators that understand this benefit and can talk to you about the benefit, or the drug card, as it would be now, where a lot of activity is. But then you continuously read reports about, well, a particular reporter or a senior called the 800 line and they got the wrong information, or they were referred to entities which were closed at the time and couldn't provide the information when the seniors needed it. And it's very, very difficult, because you think of all the momentum it takes in Washington, and it took a heck of a lot of energy on the Hill to pass the Medicare drug benefit. I was there for every minute of it, it felt like. And you look at that, but it's just the beginning. I mean, it's a huge undertaking to pass the law, but now to put it to sort of take it to the street and sell it to people or explain it to people is this unbelievable challenge. I mean, I think it's a massive hurdle that will have to be overcome, and it wouldn't surprise me in the first few months of 2006, as the drug benefit starts up, I think you'll read about a lot of kinks and a lot of problems. And some folks will love it and think it's great, especially I think if you're in an urban area, you're going to have a lot of choices for your benefits. They may, people may prefer it, but I think you're also going to read about, there's a population called the dual eligibles. These are folks who, you know, qualify for Medicaid and Medicare. They'll be getting their coverage under Medicare. There's a lot of concern about that population. Will this be confusing to them? What if they've had a drug regimen covered for a particular time and they go on a health plan that doesn't want to cover a particular drug they're on? And how do they appeal it? Do they have the ability to appeal it? How do we help them? These are all these complex considerations and issues that are being worked on now, examined. I think you probably have a lot of seniors advocates in your audience who work with them, who are working their way through their own confusion about the drug benefits. So it's a massive undertaking.
I have several callers here, and I want to tell those people, I get to them in just a second. I want to ask just one more question and have you talk about it just for a little bit. What sort of estimates have been made on the what the additional cost will be to Medicare of administering this new program?
Well, in typical Washington experience, even something you would think as simple as an estimate has become complex. When the bill passed, and that was in late 2003, the Congressional Budget Office, which is the official scorekeeper for legislation before Congress, said the bill would cost $400 billion over 10 years. Internal Bush administration estimates, which technically do not have to be part of the congressional consideration and debate because CBO, Congressional Budget Office, is the congressional scorekeeper. Internal budget, Bush administration estimates put the cost at much higher. They put the cost at about $540 billion over 10 years. And those newer, more expensive estimates surfaced just about a year ago. So that kicked off a debate in Congress, members saying, look, you've got CBO says $400 billion, but the administration knew its own estimates were far higher. And then when you look at why the estimates were different, it was based on a variety of assumptions that the different actuaries made about the number of seniors who would enroll, the number of seniors who might lose their drug coverage from an employer, how plans might, how they would handle drug coverage. It's all these complex things. But the bottom line here is nobody really knows. Because you can't tell at this point how many seniors will get into the benefit, enroll in it. There are different estimates over that, but that will affect cost. What sorts of drugs are covered, what the usage of those drugs are, and new drugs that will come on the market that may be in demand, that will be blockbusters and will cost more money. So the bottom line here really is nobody knows what the cost will be, but conservatives in Congress have argued there's nowhere to go but up, and they're probably right in many ways.
Our guest in this hour is Mary Agnes Carey. She's a senior writer with Congressional Quarterly, a publication that specializes in covering Washington politics, and we're talking about Medicare, and questions are welcome. We do have several people here waiting, and others are certainly welcome to call. We just ask people to try to be brief just so we can keep it moving and get in as many people as possible. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. First caller is Urbana, line one.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering what this is going to do to my pretty good, not excellent, but pretty good HMO, which pays prescription drugs, which I pay a copay on, which has this year gone up. I spent my out of my own pocket somewhere around $600 for prescription drugs. The pharmacy gave me a runoff of what it would have cost if I had to pay it straightforward, which would have been around $2,500. Now, I do have Medicare also, and will I have to go along with the Medicare, or what's the HMO going to say? Because I do have Medicare, is it going to require me to get one of these drug cards, which sounds very complex?
Well, the drug card is the program, the interim program that started last summer and will go to the first of next year. You don't have to have a drug card. You can just skip that if you want. This fall, you and many other Medicare beneficiaries will get in the mail a list of your options. These are the plans in your area that offer coverage. And if your current plan, which you like, is offering coverage, look it over to see how much they're going to charge you and what they're going to cover. And if you like it, you can just stay where you are.
Well, you see, I get this through a group. I'll just say it's the University of Illinois through the state. and they negotiate, and I think, you know, many of us who are employed by the university go along with that and have an HMO and go along with that program, which is negotiated in the state. But I'm wondering, you know, this is a pretty good program, not as good as you might want, but it's pretty good. And is it going to get scuttled?
I don't think that's necessarily the case. I mean, if they want to participate as a provider of Medicare drug coverage, which if they have a lot of folks already on their plan, my guess is that's the case. This is a guess on my part, but my assumption would be that they would want to offer their coverage, they would continue to offer their coverage, and you could continue to enroll in it. But that's a choice that you'll have to make this fall. But I, you know, my guess would be that you'll be okay just where you are.
Okay. Another question then is, as I understand it, there's a Medicare payment that comes out just like your plan for your doctors and that will just automatically come out of your Social Security benefit?
Well, they currently deduct your premiums, Part B premiums, out of that, and that is a very good question. My memory is that would happen the same.
Even if I didn't participate in the program?
No. If you don't participate, if you didn't enroll in either a Medicare prescription drug plan or one of these plans that is going to offer drug coverage and everything else, there would be no extra money taken out of your check. I believe it would only be if you chose one of them.
Okay. So this is just really a very confusing situation, and it was something that was pretty simple for us to handle in the past, right?
A lot of people feel that way. Other people argue it's a great opportunity for seniors to have choice. They cite things like someone is on their employer health plan, right? And then they have to go into Medicare once they've left their employer or they've retired, and they don't want the Medicare plan. They want their other plan, and so it's really a new frontier. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And I think, as everybody says in Washington all the time, the devil's in the details. You know, by the end of 2006, we'll have a better view of how this worked or didn't work.
It'll be a little late then, won't it?
Yeah, well, Congress can always go back and change things. They've done it before. They did it in 1988. There was a new law called the Catastrophic Drug Act for Medicare. And it basically was, in theory, put out there to help seniors and Medicare, other Medicare beneficiaries with really excessive drug costs. The problem was everybody paid into the system, right? But not everybody benefited by it.
Yep.
And people went nuts. You may remember the big visual on this was seniors stopping Dan Rostenkowski, who was then head of the Ways and Means Committee, and being on his car and demanding action on this, and it reverberated to the point where on the Hill they just repealed the bill.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so in theory,
that was going to be means testing, and is that going to be so that we're going to get taxed on something in our income tax then?
No, what they're talking about, the one thing they've done in this bill is they did something called income relating, which is technically a little different from means testing. They're basically saying the government contribution would change based on your income, and the income levels for that are fairly high for the government contribution to drop. But the bigger policy implication, in my opinion, is the government has opened the door to link Medicare benefits to income, and we've never done that before. Mm-hmm. So while now the threshold is fairly high, and forgive me, I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but that threshold is high for now, but if expenditures continue to climb, which everyone thinks they will, not only just for the Medicare drug benefit, but for Medicare in its totality, and as you have millions of folks begin to go into Medicare starting at 2010, which is when the baby boomers really kick in going in, there's nothing to stop folks on Capitol Hill from saying, well, we're going to lower that income cap and lower it a bit more, and it will be politically controversial if they do that, but they have sort of opened the door to it. And that may be, I think in the eyes of some policy folks, the only way to control entitlement costs down the road is to link them more to income, being the more you've made, the less you'll get in a government subsidy.
But the more you make as you get older is what you're taking from your retirement savings in 403Bs, you know.
Right.
And so that's the only reason you have more income as you get older, and then you're really giving it all away.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're just going to have to see how they handle that. But there has been a nod to it, if you will, in the drug benefit plan. And believe me, it will be. You'll hear a lot about it if they start doing that.
I will certainly say a lot about it myself.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for the call. We'll go on here. Next caller is in Champaign County on line two. Hello.
Hi. Yeah, I called about a sort of a big picture question. But on this last issue, I think the woman is right to worry about an educational institution citing that healthcare and costs of prescription drugs are outside of its core mission or something like that. But a lot of people are worried that corporations will pass off that part of whatever health insurance they are currently paying to this program and undermining some coverage that is already job linked or something like that.
Yeah, I think, are you talking about the concern that employers will drop their retiree drug coverage?
Right, exactly.
They'll say the government's doing it, we don't have to worry about it.
Right.
What they've done in the bill to try to circumvent that is they want to offer the employers a subsidy for them to continue offering coverage because they don't want, the government really doesn't want employers to stop offering coverage because it will only drive the government's bill up. So they've offered companies subsidies, incentives. They've also said that a company could become a prescription drug plan, could become a health plan in the sense of offering their retirees, as they do now, drug coverage and their health insurance benefits. So
they would qualify to be part of that.
Right.
They would qualify to their own card or something.
Exactly. So whether or not companies deem the amount of money they're going to receive is enough is yet to be seen. And, of course, as if healthcare costs continue to climb, they may decide, even though we're getting a subsidy, it's just not worth it to us. So that'll be part of the ongoing equation and pressures that we'll have to watch as this thing goes forward.
My other thing that was elicited from what you were saying was you went really lightly over this cost estimate for the Medicare bill.
Yeah.
That was a fraud. There's somebody that's being prosecuted, and there's a contempt of Congress where somebody knowingly produced the wrong figures, and up until it was passed. So, I mean, one can't just casually say that. Well, there's some argument about the
I see what you're saying. The only thing, I only went over it quickly because some people find that extremely boring.
I think fraud to get something passed is a very pertinent issue. I mean, considering how many times it's happening.
Here's the deal. Then Congress has to change its rules because congressional rules now say the agency that makes an estimate is the Congressional Budget Office. That's the out, if you will, that people are using who wanted this bill passed to cover themselves. They say, no, we didn't keep anything from Congress. In essence, they're not required to. The thing that has to happen on the Hill to definitely Democrats have made arguments about this, and they've talked about it. Even conservative Republicans have been outraged about this. You're absolutely right. But what to make this different for the future is they would have to basically change congressional rules and say, no, it's not just the Congressional Budget Office. We, as members of Congress, must have a guarantee that if there's an internal administration estimate, that that's part of the mix. And right now, it necessarily isn't. That CBO is used as the official barometer, but you could argue that that's not enough clarity. And I would think from going on forward now, when there are bills like this that come up, even though an administration, whoever's in there, may not want to make a higher estimate or even a lower estimate public, I would think you'd have many more members now in the Senate and the House saying, look, we need all this information that you have internally. And I think part of the reason they haven't passed a rules change on this is because the Republican Party doesn't want it to happen. But that's something that if you got to that kind of level of minutia procedurally, it would change the debate on a lot of these bills.
I'm going to jump in here. I'll the caller will forgive me, but we're past our midpoint here already, and I have another caller I want to get to and also want to introduce again our guest for anyone who has tuned in the last 10 minutes, perhaps. We're talking this morning with Mary Agnes Carey. She is a senior writer for Congressional Quarterly, this publication that for a long time now has been following events on Capitol Hill, and it's available in print and online. So if you're interested in reading about legislation and some of the tortured paths that it goes through, you can seek out the publication. Of course, questions here are welcome to 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. Our next caller is in Champaign and on line three. Hello.
Yeah, this is the real fiscal problem, and it's shameful that they're not talking more about it. You said that the devil's in the details, that the details are in Washington, therefore the devil is in Washington, I suppose. I got two quick questions, and I'll hang up. One is, a couple of weeks ago, there was a peculiar little article in our local paper about a company here, an insurance company, offering some sort of, it sounded like supplemental Medicare insurance, but they called it an alternative to Medicare. And so I was wondering, first, if there's something happening in that area other than supplemental insurance. And then number two, since this is going to be such a big problem in the future, I was wondering, I'm particularly worried about the things they'll cut back on, and I was wondering if you had any idea if there's any what's happening in the particular issue of transplants. You know, are they thinking to limit those? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay.
The first question, it sounds to me that is a company trying to get in the game earlier, saying an alternative to Medicare. They probably mean an alternative to Medicare as you fee for service. It probably is some insurance company or a company that's trying to offer Medicare drug coverage plus your health coverage in one package. But without seeing their materials, I couldn't quite tell you that. I don't know of any anything going on to limit coverage of transplants in any way. And you may know Medicaid, actually, other than Medicare, covers a lot more of those transplant procedures than Medicare does. It covers, actually, Medicaid rather covers a very large share of the transplants done all over the country. So I don't know of any move on that at all.
Okay, let's talk with someone else. And this caller is in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Which is in Champaign County.
That's kind of unfair. No, I'm sorry. I'm not going to do that. We do have time for other callers here. We have about 20 minutes left in the show. If there are some other callers who have not been on once already and would like to call in, you're certainly welcome to do that. The number here on Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free 800-222-9455. I want to get to something a little bit bigger, and it may be a little bit more difficult to talk about, and that is, does have to do with the larger issue of the growing cost of Medicare, not just in terms of providing prescription drug coverage. And I think that a lot of people, as some of the callers have referenced, say that, yes, you know, because now we're talking about Social Security, they're going to say, yes, maybe Social Security has problems. But if you take a look at this longer range issue of how it is we're going to pay for rising costs in the future, Medicare is much bigger. And then I think there are a lot of people are saying the next big thing has to be Medicare.
Right.
What exactly are people thinking, and how are they talking about this these days?
Well, you've got someone like David Walker, who heads the General Accounting Office, right? Who's out there, and they do all sorts of. People will read about something called a GAO report. GAO looked at this government spending, that government spending. They're out there, sort of a government watchdog group, but people are talking about the unsustainability of what we have. And part of the reason that some Republican conservatives didn't want the drug bill to pass last year is they say it was tagged to cost. They're worried about the cost. And as more baby boomers get into the system, again, this is 2010 point where people are really looking at the numbers of Medicare beneficiaries climbing, that the debate, I think, is going to come down to, can we as a nation, or do we as a nation, want to continue to offer what we've offered? And you see it, you mentioned Social Security at the top of the program. President went out of his way at State of the Union to say if you are, I think he said 55 years old or older, you got nothing to worry about, which is the sign that they're looking at the younger populations and the growth in that younger population when they get into the programs as where the spending bubble will be, if you will. So that, you know, right now, a lot of the debate on Medicare is around, or a lot of the focus, rather, I should say, a lot of it is around the drug benefit. People that don't like the drug benefit want to get it repealed. People that like the drug benefit are talking up its values and its greatness and how people should enroll, and that's a lot of the debate here and getting it online. But the longer, bigger question is, what do we want Medicare to be? And if the watching how the drug benefit unfolds will be critical, because if it doesn't do well, or people don't like it, or seniors are extremely uncomfortable with trying to pick between these plans, which is something opponents of the bill predict will happen, then that may be a signal to Washington and to lawmakers, look, people like the uniformity of the current Medicare program. They didn't want it to change, and you're just going to have to deal with this influx of additional people. So I think, to me, that's, in my mind, philosophically, what the debate will come down to be. What do we want to cover? Can we afford to do what we've been doing? Do we need to do it differently? And how ready is the public to accept that, or will they reject it and want to go back to, you know, when Medicare has been, you know, a program for years and years and years, you know, since 1965. I mean, we've had 40 years of it, and people, many people have, you know, the satisfaction is extremely high. People like it. They have a comfort level with it. And what will happen when, with the drug benefit and you know, people, what will they be picking, and will they decide to stay in fee-for-service? Will the enrollment figures be anywhere close to what they want? I mean, those are all the things we need to watch.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, we have about 15 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Our guest is Mary Agnes Carey. She is a senior writer with Congressional Quarterly. We're talking about Medicare, and we have spent a good deal of time talking about the Medicare prescription drug program that will be going into effect in January of next year, right at the beginning of next year, but also perhaps something of the larger issues involved with the cost overall of the system, and how do we continue to meet those costs, as we know that the cost of delivering health care seems to be going up all the time, and the potential number of people who are going to be needing health care is going to go up to 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Something else I came across, and I guess I must have missed this myself, maybe it didn't get a whole lot of coverage, is that as a part of the Medicare prescription drug legislation, there also is a provision that promotes health savings accounts, right, which is something that the president, I think, has been interested in for some time. Generally, I think their philosophy is, you know, the less the government is involved in health care, the better. And what they're wanting to do is to move it more. And also, it seems that what they want to do is decouple health care from employment, which is the way generally if people now have some kind of health insurance, that's how they get it. They get it through their work. And it seems that this is something that this in trying to get ready to talk with you this morning and looking at some articles that were published just within the last couple of weeks, this is the first I've seen this.
Well, it's very interesting. The health savings account piece of the Medicare bill was added to the Medicare bill pretty late in the game. It's been an idea that was kicked around out there, but it was added, I think, to get a lot of conservatives on the bill because they like the very ideas you're talking about, the idea of having individuals more responsible for their health care. The thought behind an HSA, basically you're getting coverage, you have a high deductible account, but you can put money, a high deductible policy, rather, that you need to meet, but you can put money to help meet those financial parameters of the policy. You can put that in tax-free into a savings account. So the thought is that people will be so cautious, and they'll be watching what they're spending and watching what things cost, because it will no longer be, you may not have a policy, for example, that has a $10 copayment every time you go to the doctor. You may be required to pay more, and you have to pay more before coverage kicks in, so you'll be more judicious with your spending. That helped pass the bill, basically, in the House of Representatives. There were people that voted for the Medicare drug bill, not because they really liked the Medicare drug benefit, but because they liked the health savings accounts. And it goes to the president's concept of the ownership society. But of course, there's a lot of criticism about these accounts. There's public health concerns. For example, will people not do all the preventative care measures they would do otherwise that would be covered by your health plan? And will they create a patchwork of care where certain things are covered in one place, but you can't get the option of a plan to have them covered somewhere else? And some people just feel like this will undermine the employer provided healthcare system, which is what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. It's millions and millions of Americans get there. Most of Americans, like 85%, get their healthcare through their employer. So that's another sort of social experiment that we'll be watching and keeping, you know, your eyes on, because the Republican Party for a long time has sort of spoken to these issues and more market-based solutions on healthcare. And now, if you will, the rubber's hitting the road. You know, how many folks will sign up for the health savings accounts? How do they work? They may be very attractive to employers because chances are offering health savings accounts to your workers is a lot cheaper than offering them a traditional insurance plan. And since you get your insurance at work, if your only option is a health savings account, then that's what you're going to be in. Because if you went outside of your employer and tried to buy a traditional health insurance plan on the open market, you would pay a tremendous amount of money for it. So you're right. It's a very interesting point. It's a very interesting thing to watch and to see how these things work and do they deliver as promised.
All right. Well, let's go on to some other callers. We have someone in Indiana here, line number 4. Hello.
Hello. This is not a criticism of your guest or you either, Dave, but the times you've had these people on, you know, she's finally starting to talk about the rubber hitting the road. Well, my rubber's been on the road, and I'm not an unintelligent fellow. And this is one of the most confusing things presented to a person. You know how many cards are out there available? Yeah. You know how difficult it is to find out if the medicines you take are on any of the cards? I mean, it's incredible. It's like they passed it and they said, well, it's up to you elderly people to figure this crap out. I went to CVS and they just sort of more or less told me go out the door unless I spend more than $2,500 a year. And then I found out that after you spend so much money, there's a huge space between, I think it's between 2,000 and 6,000 when you pay yourself completely. Nobody helps you.
Yeah, that's the gap in the benefit, right?
And I talked to a lady at the hospital, and she's got little old ladies dying because they can't come up with monies to cover this 2,000 to 4,000 or whatever it is. I mean, I know most of this is anecdotal, but Dave, I'd like for you to get somebody on that's, you know, 65 or older, that's been through the thing and knows what the hell is going on.
Well, that was kind of the reason that we chose the guest that we had, because she had she spends almost full time following issues like this. So, she and I can't speak about this from personal experience. That's true. But that was the reason that we have had now. This is the third time. She's been really good about giving us her time. This is the third time that she's been on the show to try to talk about this, because obviously it is confusing. There are a lot of people who have a really tough time trying to sort it all out.
Can I ask the caller, did you sign up for a drug card or no?
He ran off, okay. So I don't know.
Because I think that, see, this is what you try to quantify as a reporter, and you try to find this stuff out. How many, the number that you almost can never know is how many people thought about doing a drug card and had the same experience that your caller just had and said, forget it.
And gave up. Yeah.
And then how many of those folks, when they get their information in their mailbox about the drug benefit, the choices, will say, look, this is a bunch of gobbledygook, and I don't want a thing to do with it. And I think about everything he said is absolutely right, and it's very confusing for a lot of people. Of course, every time I go to a news conference that's sponsored by the Department of Health and Human Services, they'll have seniors on there that talked about this drug card is great, and it saved me $1,000, and it's the best thing in the world. And from the administration's perspective, that's what you're going to hear. But the voices of folks like what you just had are just as strong and just as powerful and should be heard. And I hope that gentleman and his friends are calling their representative or calling their senator, are making their voices heard as well. And that's the sort of stuff that we're going to be watching a lot and hearing a lot about over the next year.
Let's talk with somebody in Charleston there. Next, line 3. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I just came on late, so I'm not sure this is directly on target. But with all the emphasis now on privatizing Social Security, I'm just wondering what evidence there is that young employees, young workers, actually are good at saving. I remember when I was in my 20s, and you work from paycheck to paycheck because there's no money left over at the end. So if we privatize Social Security, it seems to me that, first of all, it seems to me that's going to be problematic. I don't believe that 20-somethings are into thinking about retirement, thinking about those sorts of issues. I certainly wasn't, and most folks that I knew were not. We were concerned with today. And secondarily, I would really like it if this administration started making policy decisions based upon evidence, not based upon ideology. So what evidence is there that young workers actually are good at saving, that they would take a certain amount of money every single month and put that away toward retirement and those sorts of things? Is there any evidence to indicate that?
I don't know of any. I have not researched that, and I don't know anything about it. I apologize.
Thank you.
All right. Well, let's go to a cell phone caller here. Next line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I wanted to make a comment about the HSA account. I'm a healthcare consumer, but I'm also a healthcare provider, and I have an HSA account. It's true that it has a high deductible, a $5,000 deductible, but what I've even found for myself is I have become a more conscientious consumer because that first $5,000 comes out of my pocket. And as a provider, I have seen many, many abuses of the federal Medicare system in that I've seen 24-year-old patients whose the only medicine they're on is Prozac on permanent disability through Medicare, and 45 and 55-year-old men who are in better shape than I am on permanent disability for something that happened a long time ago. I think there's a lot of abuses in the governmental system, and I think if they privatize more of it, people would become more responsible.
That's certainly one viewpoint. I think you've captured very eloquently the position of the proponents of these health savings accounts, and I think the question is going to be, how do people, you know, use them, and do they like them, and will there be cases of people who ignored certain medical care they should have had because they decided they didn't want to spend the money, or they should have spent the money, or whatever. So I think that there's going to be people all over the map. People are going to like them, like your caller just talked about, and some people will dislike them. We'll just have to see how it works out.
All right, let's go to, I think, the last call. Another caller here. This is someone listening in Moultrie County. It's line number two. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
My question, my comment is that I bought one of those health cards, and when I went to my druggist to get a prescription filled, he laughed at me and said, hey, I can sell it to you cheaper by just buying it over the counter than I can using that health card just because of the paperwork involved. And I thought that one, yeah, well, I'm not going to mess with those things again. That's my comment. Thank you.
Well, that's certainly, again, another excellent anecdotal evidence of the rubber hitting the road, as your previous caller talked about, that this is an example of you've got beneficiaries who love this thing, and you got beneficiaries who say, I don't like it. I've been struck by the number of comments I've gotten last time on this program of what the pharmacists and the nurses and the doctors are telling their patients or their customers about the drug card. I think that's striking. Because if you're a pharmacist and you feel this adds to your burden, as a caller just talked about, somebody saying there's all this paperwork and give it to you cheaper over the counter, that's not going to help the administration have a successful drug benefit if you don't have other folks on board. So that's a whole other dynamic that's going to happen as this thing goes forward.
Yeah, we're coming down to the point here. We have just a couple of minutes left. And I guess I'm just curious, is there anything else that is still a little bit under the radar that you know about because you spend all of your time on Capitol Hill and talking to people in Congress and you know what's being discussed? Anything that really isn't getting a whole lot of coverage that you think soon is going to be?
Well, I think one thing that it's separate from the Medicare drug benefit, but I think there's going to be a lot of examination here of the Medicaid program. Hmm. Medicaid is the shared state, federal health insurance program for the poor and disabled, and it has become a huge cost for many state budgets. In some states, it's second behind education. The federal government wants to reduce its financial burden when it comes to Medicaid. A lot of state governors feel their Medicaid costs are escalating, and they don't want the federal money to diminish. So this will be a big debate on the Hill, in part because the federal government wants to cut, the Bush administration wants to cut the budget deficit, so they're looking for savings everywhere. And as the president's budget comes out next week, looking at how much they're going to ask for Medicaid savings, how much from Medicare, they may want the Medicare program to reduce the amount of money it pays to hospitals and some other providers. Physicians, I don't think, are going to be reduced because they were going to get cut anyway in 2006, and that's a technical formula thing they're going to fix. But I think looking at how the government cost savings the government wants to get out of Medicaid and Medicare is going to be a very big story that has not gotten a lot of information, a lot of press right now.
Well, we're going to have to leave it at that because we've come to the end of the time. I want to thank you very much once again for giving us your time. We appreciate
it. Sure, you're welcome.
Our guest, Mary Agnes Carey. She is a senior writer with Congressional Quarterly. It's a publication that exists in print and online. If you're interested in following legislation as it works its way through Congress, that's a good place to go.